Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Dr. Paul Kanger, who's a returning guest in this program, thankfully. And Dr. Kanger teaches political science at Grove City College. He's also a best-selling author and a columnist who churns out so many articles, it's amazing. Paul, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks, Jerry. Appreciate it.
Sure. Never a dull moment in this particular election cycle. Let's talk about what's been going on just in the last week or so. And we'll begin with Donald Trump's remarks about women and abortion to Chris Matthews.
Yes. Yeah, no, that was really something. And, I mean, look, I agree. I saw a couple of different people who said this, and so it's not originally my thought, but Mark Thiessen was one person. He's the former Bush speechwriter, and he's at the Washington Post. And somebody else said it, too. But my take on this, Jerry, is that what you really saw there is, you know, Donald Trump is, look, he's not a conservative. He never has been. He's a Johnny-come-lately to conservatism. He's a Johnny-come-lately to being pro-life. He's even said that. If we take him at his word, he's only had a recent conversion to becoming pro-life. We've seen in debates that his understanding of a lot of these issues is about an inch thick. And so when he got asked a question that anybody who's been in the pro-life movement immediately knows, and that, you know, most semi-sophisticated conservatives who've argued things with pro-choicers over the years, we all know the conservative movement doesn't support punishing women who have abortions.
Mm-hmm.
But Trump really wouldn't know that. And so what I think he did was, you know, he couldn't say, I don't know, I hadn't thought about it. So I think what he did was he gave the answer to Matthews that he probably thought a conservative would be expected to give, and that a conservative would support, not knowing that, no, we don't support that at all. And so that's the answer that he gave, and now there's tremendous fallout, not just by the pro-choice left, but you know, pro-life conservatives and Christian conservatives. Although I will say this, Jerry, I get emails from and read reader comments all day from the Trump supporters. This won't dent their position on him at all. They are absolutely 100%. Trump could have stood up there and told Chris Matthews, as he said before, that he could shoot somebody in broad daylight. They will support him no matter what. I found that they are unpersuadable. They are immovable. They cannot be affected. You cannot convince them. You can't change their minds. It's about a 33%. And no matter what he says, they defend and excuse. But what this will do is it will really affect
the other
people people kind of
non 33%.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's funny. My term for this, and this is original with me to my knowledge, is Trump fever. Once somebody gets Trump fever, no matter what happens or what he says or whatever, they can never be dissuaded to oppose him. But the big question is the rest of America. We're only dealing with, so far, the Republican primary, and the same could be said on the Democratic side of the aisle and the conflict between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. But as far as what's going on with Trump, we're only dealing with what the Republican voters in the primaries have said. That doesn't represent the majority of Americans by any stretch of any imagination, even though obviously Trump has been winning most of these primaries.
Well, that's right. So look, his automatic 30 to 40% that he gets in every single state from a certain group of Republicans or Trump voters, that's where he caps. You know, I hear from them again and again that, oh, he's bringing in all these new people. He's not. The guy has 60+% negative rankings in a general election. So whereas he does so well in a primary with a divided field where there was originally 17 people and now there's three. I mean, he can still win a lot of states with 35-40% because there's three people in it. You know, Bernie Sanders and Hillary don't have this problem because they're in a two-person race. But when he gets into a general election, and, you know, he caps out at 30-40%, we're looking right now, Jerry, at a Hillary Clinton landslide against Trump of at least 40 states. You know, the very latest Real Clear Politics polling average, although I haven't checked it today, I checked it yesterday, Hillary leads Trump by 11 points, and this is really absolutely jaw-dropping. Bernie Sanders beats Donald Trump by 17.5 points. Bernie Sanders beats Trump by 17.5 points. But if you tell this to Trump people, and I email these RCP averages to them daily, over and over and over again, they assure me that this is just like Ronald Reagan in 1980. That, uncanny similarity. Hey, Reagan was down to Jimmy Carter by this point in 1980. And look at what he did.
Okay, what is your comment to that? And this is a good question for you because at least two or three of your most popular books were about Ronald Reagan. And so if anybody knows about Reagan, in fact, you, and I appreciate this, Paul, you have brought to light some important factors about Reagan. And Michael Milton, I don't know if you know who that is, but he's a pastor and he speaks sometimes and he's, writes some articles. Yeah, he is a good guy. And he said one thing that Dr. Paul Kanger kind of, showed the rest of us that most of us didn't really kind of see along the lines is that the key to understanding Reagan is his Christian commitment. It was a quiet commitment, but it was there. And you documented it so well in your book, God and Ronald Reagan. So you, Mr. Reagan historian, what is your comment to the Trumpsters who say, oh, this is just like Reagan versus Carter. It'll be like Trump versus Hillary. Don't worry, Trump will pull it out of the hat.
Yeah, well, no, the only similarity between Reagan and Carter is that Reagan likewise was behind, like Trump. But all the similarities stop there. Reagan didn't repulse 70% of the population. Reagan, there wasn't a, of course there was no internet back then, but there wasn't a hashtag never Reagan. Right? I mean, Reagan was liked. The reason that Reagan
and there
was
were some there were some Reagan haters, no question about that.
Yeah, but they were mainly on the left. It was policy wise. They didn't detest him as a person. Really, Reagan's problem was that Reagan had to convince the wider public that he wasn't just a dumb actor. He had to remind them that he had been governor for two terms. He had to show that record. He had to show them that, Reagan read National Review, Human Events.
Yeah, he was very well informed. Didn't he even write his own radio commentaries? And he even wrote some of his own speeches or even those that others wrote for him. He interacted with that material. And you pointed that out, in fact, in some of your books. And that's right.
In fact, that abortion question, I could cite for you almost off the top of my head Reagan radio commentaries that he wrote on abortion in the late 70s. He was thinking through all of this stuff all the time. Reagan loved these ideas. Reagan was a 100% doctrinaire, committed, ideological conservative who really understood it. So Trump isn't any of that stuff. The hurdles that Trump will have to overcome to beat a Hillary or a Bernie, I think, are absolutely and utterly insurmountable, because he's got a massive number of liberals, Democrats, independents, and even traditional Republicans who will never vote for him and think that he's toxic. The things that Trump has said about women and about every Republican in the field around him, Reagan never said anything like that about anybody in his life. I could tell you, I've written six books on Reagan. Reagan didn't talk about people.
In fact, Reagan had the 11th commandment, thou shalt not speak badly of your fellow Republican.
Yeah, thou shalt not speak ill of a fellow Republican.
By the way, Gerald Ford had a very witty response to that when he first heard it. He said, you know what? The original 10 were good enough for me if they were good enough for God. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, Donald Trump has an 11th commandment, and it's thou shall speak ill of every Republican.
Yeah, the one part about this race that bothers me more than anything else is this statement of Lion Ted in reference to Cruz, because it seems to have legs to it. And it's like, this is a guy, as far as I can tell, is building his whole, and by way of full disclosure, I support him because I support him on the issues, but he built his whole campaign on his own personal integrity. So to call him Lying Ted over and over and over is just very unfair to me.
Well, Donald Trump is a one-man flamethrower. So he turns to his left, Lying Ted, turns to his right, Choking Marco, walks into Ohio, tells the people of Ohio, You know, your state stinks. You know, Kasich is saying what a great job he's doing. No, he hasn't. This state is a joke. Goes into Wisconsin, does the same thing to Scott Walker.
Well, now, wouldn't the Trumpsters...
loser. George W. Bush, liar. Yeah. Charlie Farina, ugly. Heidi Cruz, ugly. Reagan would do this?
No, that's a good point. Now, what about the Trumpsters that would say, yeah, but don't you see, Paul? He'll turn around and do that against Hillary if she gets the nomination, or Bernie, and that's what we need.
Yeah, well, first of all, that's... stuff's already being done against Hillary. I mean, this stuff works with the Trump supporters. It doesn't work with the general electorate.
Right.
I mean, it appeals to his unbelievably dedicated group of followers. I've never seen anything like it on the right. I think it's actually scary.
Yeah, I know what you mean. His Fifth Avenue remark alone says it all. He himself said it.
I've got an email right here. I could click it. I'll click it.
Okay.
I probably shouldn't read it. I won't say her name on the air. She's comparing Trump to Jesus Christ, Jerry.
Who is this? Somebody writing you an email?
It is. But
or
I
a columnist?
A bunch of them. And I did a show on a nationally syndicated radio show. I won't say what it is. It's a Christian show. Really great guys. I love the people. The host didn't support this. The producer didn't support this. The woman who called right before I got on the air listed 7 commonalities that she identified between Trump and Jesus. I got an email from Ed Martin, who runs the Permission to Trump group of Phyllis Schlafly's group, putting out a letter that he got from a pro-family, traditional values person invoking scripture in the case of Donald Trump. You know, this woman here who's emailed me, her name is Carolina. She's quoting scripture, and she thinks that Trump is the anointed one. And I must say, a lot of them, I'm trying to figure out where they're coming from, a lot of them are former Ben Carson supporters. And, you know, when Carson endorsed Trump, they seem to think that there was maybe some sort of laying on of hands at that moment imparted upon the Donald.
Yeah.
So some of them, this is an amazing thing to see, especially for, and I told this poor, you know, lovely lady who is very kind. I just said, do you think that she's writing in this email to me, Jerry, about how important same-sex marriage is to her. Traditional marriage is to her. I told her, I said, do you seriously think that Donald Trump is bothered by same-sex marriage? I said, I'm sure you are. Ted Cruz is. Marco Rubio was. John Kasich, I don't know if he really is. But Trump isn't. Trump doesn't care. You think Donald Trump compares about the baker and the photographer, you know, that are being defended by the Alliance for Defending Freedom because they won't make a cake or take a picture for a same-sex wedding ceremony? Ted Cruz is. Rubio was. Kasich doesn't care. But Trump certainly doesn't care.
You know, it's funny you should say all these things, because one of the first things that made me concerned about Donald Trump when I began to realize he's a serious candidate was the way he just threw Kim Davis under the bus. You know, the Supreme Court made their ruling. You know, she's got to go to jail because she doesn't agree with the Supreme Court's ruling. You know, they've spoken and that's it, you know. So
right.
It's like, wow, no understanding about judicial activism. And this guy wants to appoint judges to the Supreme Court, not to mention all the crudeness, the vulgarity.
Right.
The way this is, you know, this is bringing the national discourse down several pegs, to put it nicely. You know, there is a link between manners and morals. My mom used to say that, and for a while I didn't really, you know, fully agree with that, but I think it's true. I mean, when Wilberforce, for example, talked about the Reformation of morals in his day, the very phrase he used was the Reformation of manners. That's 200 years ago. I mean, that says something.
Sure. Well, and it speaks to not just that, I would add temperament as well. You know, that he clearly, you can't criticize Donald Trump. When you do, he just loses it. He absolutely loses it. I think, honestly, frankly, and I'm thinking about writing something on this, the problem is it's speculative, but I think he never expected to get this far to begin with.
Yeah.
I think he's probably shocked by the level of support that he has. the last debate that I watched, where it had all four guys, him and Rubio and Cruz and Kasich, I turned to the guy left to me, to my left. His name is Todd, an old friend of mine, old FDR Democrat who's voting for Cruz, by the way. And, wow. And we just marveled at Trump's total lack of policy specifics, especially compared to Cruz and Rubio. And then at one point, after just being really disgusted and almost depressed by this, realizing that somebody with such a terrible grasp of the issues was the front runner, I turned to my friend Todd, Jerry, and I said, you know, I wondered, does he really want to be president? Would he not be bored by the position? Because you got to spend all day long doing all these different things, all the ceremonies, all the meetings, all the decisions, all the policy issues. I could see a policy nerd like Rubio or Cruz eating it up. But I wonder if Trump would even enjoy it.
You know, that's funny. I heard that when he was getting married to the third one, that as he was walking down the aisle, he was thinking, oh, I'm bored with her already. Something to that effect. And it's like, and even when he even said publicly, you know, of course we're going to get divorced one day. So we got to make sure, right, we have our prenuptial. It's like, what? How do you, I think I read about that through one of your own articles. It's hard to believe. How about a closing thought on where we are at the election at this point?
Sure. Yeah, no, I think at this point, if Wisconsin, it looks like, is hopefully going to vote for Ted Cruz. And if that's the case, then I think there's no way that I think Wisconsin will be crucial, especially if Trump loses, to denying Trump the 1237 that he needs.
Dr. Paul Kanger.
And then if that happens, it's a split convention.
All right. Visionsandvalues.org for more information. Paul Kanger, always a pleasure. Thank you. Keep up the great work.
All right, Jerry. Thanks.
God bless. Bye-bye.